Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit 1 per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Okay, welcome back to D&D Versus, an actual play D&D adventure where the only thing that can stop one DM with a bad brain is one player character with a dumb brain. I'm your Dungeon Master, Yanata Blue, and with me again, after surviving eldritch psychic horrors of the Underdark, is Trevor Hegstrom, playing the part of Silvo. Trevor, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you for venturing into the Underdark. I think we're probably looking at either a journey through the Underdark or out of it this week. But before we get into that, tell us a little something about Silvo.
Okay, so I'm going to pull out my another getting to know you question from the chat pack. If you could take any job for just 1 month, what job would you have? Assume that you would have the skills and knowledge to perform adequately. Silvo is he's kind of a wandering monk, you know, teaching the ways of capoeira and dance wherever he goes. When he goes to a new place, he likes to find if there's someone giving like a tour. And so he thinks it'd be really cool, you know, if he were to like settle in a place for long enough to get a job as the tour guide, be the one who's showing people around the area.
Would he also like dance as he was giving the tours though?
You know, I think that he would find places to incorporate song into the tour for certain. There would be a local dance instruction place as part of the tour, or part of the tour would be teaching the people some manner of a local dance.
Fantastic. All right. Well, speaking of teaching local people dances, last episode, Silvo ventured down into the sanctuary of the Predators, where not only did Silvo learn that Dr. Frankenfooter, the father of the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter, is still alive, but had actually made contact with the Predators, taking a crystal from them that he promised to power back up so that they could use it to commune with their deity that they worship, that they refer to as Mother. Silvo undertook the task of participating in the ritual in place of Groucho to try to commune with Mother, but instead, her fiancé picked up the call, and Silvo had a nice little conversation with the Groom, an entity that encouraged Silvo to journey and to find the heart, at least as a means of communing with and finding Mother. After a brief encounter, and well, I think it's generous to call it a battle, but we'll call it an encounter with the Elder Brain that is the collective hive mind of the Predator Sanctuary, Silvo removed the soul using the soul grabby claw from the Elder Brain and put it into a millipede that is now trapped in a jar. You have successfully rescued Groucho, you have rescued Captain Ludlow, and you ended last episode with being joined by Miss Cleo, a voice in the Sanctuary of the Predators, who wants to journey to rescue a predator that she seems to have a bit of a crush on named Alpha Case. We talked before the episode, Trevor, that you have taken a long rest. I know that you really toughed it out in terms of waking up, diving right into action and dealing with a lot of psychic damage. So we're going to advance time. I believe because you're in a Eladrin, you only need 4 hours for a long rest. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we're going to pick up in anime episode style where you have already had your long rest. Miss Cleo is allowing you, Captain Ludlow, and Groucho to enjoy a nice hot soak in the hot tub in her room that I mentioned, separated by a partition. She is currently sitting on the other side of the partition so that she can communicate with you all, but she is granting you all the privacy. She is suggesting which routes you have to take in terms of reaching the city of Vanilla for your collective overlapping missions. Miss Cleo is explaining in all of your heads simultaneously. There is a route that can take us up to the surface. It leads through the temple at the north end of the city of Panda. There is also another path that I believe the refugees from the collapsed city would be taking to reach Vanilla for safety as well. We can take that upper tunnel, but it might be dangerous. However, Captain Ludlow has noted to us already that there would be safety in numbers if we can catch up to the refugees. And then finally, there is a lower path that passes by the Holy Corpse.
Which one do you think is the safest? Because I was charged and entering this world to take care of this little boy, Groucho here. He's going to reach over and scratch Groucho behind the ears.
Miss Cleo would offer her thoughts first, I think, where she would say, I believe that there are dangers everywhere, and I have been brought up to believe that the surface presents dangers from all things and all creatures that would fear the comprehension of Mother. While the deepest path would certainly have its share of perils, I do believe that you all have survived the encroachment and the dangers of having your minds open to realities beyond our own, and that the pilgrimage past the holy remains would bear fruit for all of us in our minds and souls. Ludlow, meanwhile, is sitting in the bath next to you, and just for the sake of keeping this, again, TV PG-13 appropriate, all of you are wearing, like, swim shorts, but Ludlow is sort of scratching his stubble, and once again, he swoops his emo hair out of his face, and he offers his thoughts. I don't like traveling via terrain that is unknown to us. However, the refugees would certainly have Order of Infernus members that would be organizing their progression. And in addition to being able to help the refugees, I do believe it would be safer to have larger numbers and also other members in a party who are prepared and capable of fighting. In terms of the smartest strategy, I do believe that the upper tunnel would be safest. Groucho is just going to automatically pipe up and say,
I think I've had enough of tunnels. If we could get up to the surface, I mean, I think if I'm keeping track of time, I know it's late at night, but maybe that would help us. We could get up there and we could use the cover of darkness to get out of the city of Panda safely, and we could find a safe highway or a road with plenty of visibility to travel by daylight, so that way nothing could ensnare us. That's my vote, is that we get out of these tunnels as quickly as possible. No offense, Miss Cleo, but I would be much more comfortable with the sky over my head than all of this dark sharp rocks.
Captain Ludlow, if most of the people are traveling through the tunnels, what do you think is above ground?
Above ground could be whatever dangers threw us down here. We still don't know the extent of this plot. We know that certainly Miss Cleo and her people assisted, but they coordinated with others. The city of Panda is certainly going to be on high alert, and people emerging from the temple that remained unscathed could draw unnecessary attention. And at this, Groucho does chime in.
He is right. I mean, Pam was about to be arrested before she flung herself into the pit. I don't think they would be too amenable to seeing people suddenly emerge safely from the darkness. If they were so suspicious of her when she was just there to have brunch, how suspicious might it look? But we can be sneaky, can't we, Captain?
Stealth is not a part of my particular skill set, unfortunately.
We have dangers below, enemies up above. Say, Captain Ludlow, if we're traveling with Miss Cleo here, what do you think the people in the tunnels would, how would they react to her?
Miss Cleo is going to chime in on this.
I am prepared to hide my appearance. I have a finely crafted mask that will completely conceal my face from those above who might find it disconcerting, to say the least. and I will commit to keeping it on and hiding my appearance from them.
I think that the safest route, little Groucho, I know that you want to go above, but I told Pam I would keep you safe. And I think the safest is going to be the tunnels with the people.
All right. So with that decision made, the party all nods in agreement at your leadership. I would ask you to make a perception roll as you get out of the bath and you're getting your stuff packed up and you're getting ready to set out into the tunnels.
Not bad at perception. That is going to be a 16.
You do see that the millipede that you put the Elder Brain's soul is still safely in the jar on Miss Cleo's desk. It is being left there for the time being. It has been curled up in a tight spiral. It's pretty much filling up the entire bottom of the jar that it's in, but it has not moved and it doesn't look like it's reacting or moving in response to your departure.
Hey, Miss Cleo, what do you think would happen to the big brother's soul if this millipede dies?
I suppose the same thing that would happen to any soul when the body that it occupies dies. It would find its way to a new plane of existence.
Do you think he has any powers while in there?
She looks at the jar, squints, and I'm going to have her roll. And she says, the soul does carry power, but the body has to be capable of expressing it to a certain extent.
Millipedes don't have much power, except to eat leaves, I think.
No, and I'd imagine that it's a bit of a suitable punishment to experience that limitation after abusing his power for so long.
I hope he doesn't get out while we're gone. That would be a lot of trouble. Any ways we could make him be more secure?
Yes, we do have a secure safe in the rear asp of the sanctuary. I can put the jar in there. I will make sure to put it with food. I would not want to be so cruel as to starve him to death.
No, of course not. That sounds like a good idea to me.
So she disappears back into the sanctuary in the temple room below while you all finish up. She comes back within 10 minutes and you are able to set off unless you have anything else that you wanted to check out or consider before you leave.
No, I think that's it.
Okay. You retrace your steps back through the tunnels. As we mentioned last episode, Silvo had a good memory of the route taken to reach the sanctuary from the hive, but you take a slightly different route because you don't need to cut through the hive. You come back out onto the bridge where you first found the Grabby Claw, where there had previously been the inert, soulless body of one of the predators, and you cross that bridge into the collapsed remains of the city of Panda that had fallen down from up above and onto the mesa. I mean, the whole thing looks like a, gingerbread house that just got dropped from the table and just collapsed in on itself. The entire city is pretty much rubble and broken walls. But up above you, you can see the firmament of a starry sky. Based on how high the sky is, it seems as if you've dropped about 10 to 20 stories. I will ask you, do you remember where the city organizers were calling for the people to organize to set out through the tunnels?
Oh, do I remember?
Because you're the only one in the party that heard those calls when you landed, if you recall.
Let's see. I know it wasn't south. I should have written that in my notes. Oh, well. So when I exit the door, what direction am I facing when we exit?
The door that you come out to get back to that bridge that I mentioned, that is going to be on the eastern side of the city.
Right. So I think we had to go to the west side to get out.
Everyone nods. Ludlow is keeping his ears alert. You know, he's doing the Aragorn thing where he has his hand subtly on his sword hilt at all times. Groucho is keeping in the middle of the pack, but fairly close to you if he's keeping close to any of you three. And Miss Cleo seems actually like she's kind of enjoying herself. She seems to be the one person that seems to have like a light sort of casual step among all of you. You wend your way through the rubble over some collapsed buildings and other detritus. After about an hour, so I'll say it's about 1 a.m. at this point, you find your way to the western side of the city. This side of the city, the mesa has sort of like broken over onto, so it isn't so much that there's a natural stone bridge from this part of the mesa, it's just that the city has connected this part of the mesa to the perimeter of the cavern that it's in. Across on the wall, where the city is currently leaning, you see a large set of stone doors. And Miss Cleo telepathically tells you, and you can see carvings of Honda Days on these doors. It seems as if you have led us to the staircase that would lead to the temple that I mentioned in the upper city.
That's not the way I meant to go.
Wait, wait. If that leads to the temple, we're here already. Why don't we just take it and go up?
How long did it take us to get through the city?
About an hour, because like I said, it's all broken and collapsed. So it's not like they're straight roads, like you're climbing over. You have to like find ways around. Ludlow would also add, we did lose a little bit of time if this isn't the way the refugees came, which means that right. There's even more distance between us and them that we would have to make up.
Yes, you're right. And honestly, if it's not this way, I don't know the way to get to them, unfortunately. I don't remember exactly. I was a bit distracted by trying to find Groucho at the time. I'm sorry. As long as we're here, we may as well continue to go this way.
You don't have to apologize for helping me. I appreciate it so much.
And his eyes like are watering up with gratitude. Mm.
I'm so happy that so far all three of you have been such wonderful friends. You know, Pam, I was so worried when I lost Pam, but you're quite good yourself, Mr. Silvo.
And he kind of like his shoulders like just lightly touching you a little bit. So he feels very comfortable with you. But with that, Miss Cleo approaches the doors and with a wave of her hand, you can just tell that she's saying something telepathically. The doors begin to slowly open towards you. She snaps her fingers and torches light and you can see a staircase spiraling up. So she begins leading the way up, and I'm assuming that you're following after her, or do you want to take the front, or would you prefer to be at the rear?
I'll take the front. He says, I know I'm supposed to go ladies first, but we don't know what's up there. Let me go first, and I can take it.
As I mentioned, you're about significantly down below ground, so you have a lot of climbing to do. Okay. I know you don't play Final Fantasy games, but it's kind of like that scene in Final Fantasy VII for the listeners, where you have to climb the staircases of Shinra HQ in Disc 1. Groucho starts looking a little bit tired. Do you want to take a break for his sake, or do you offer to give him a piggyback ride?
I'll give him a piggyback ride.
Roll Constitution for me.
Good thing I took that bonus in Constitution when I leveled up. That's a 14.
With a 14, if you got below a 12, I was going to say that you'd take a level of exhaustion, but nope, you're in good shape. Got that cardio in. Now give me a perception roll.
5.
You've got little piggybacking Groucho who, between his dog breathing and also just him chattering in your ear about how grateful he is to get
I'm so happy to get a ride, Mr. Silvo. I suppose I hope I'm not too heavy for you, but I really do appreciate it. There are ever so many stairs.
As he's continuing this, you get to the wooden doors to the temple. And they don't seem to be locked. It's just a pair of like, you know, heavy, like, you know, teardrop shaped doors. I'm assuming you just go through them.
So we've reached the top of the stairs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll let Groucho down first. All right, little Groucho, on your feet now. And then he will, try to push the door open, I guess.
So you do push the doors open. Inside the temple, this looks a little bit less like the sort of underdark, eldritch, green-lit horror temple from down below. This one looks a little bit more like your sort of standard fair chapel. Very similar to the one that Stephen Hart went to in episode 1, where he met Father Tully. You have a tapestry at the front. Directly to your left is the dais with a podium. You can see, you know, candle stands and a tapestry depicting Honda Days with the beams of light emanating from her skull and her face is blindfolded. Before the podium, in the aisle between the pews, you can see two figures currently kneeling and praying. And they look at you, but they don't stop their chanting. And there are two other people standing at the rear of the chapel by the door. One of them you do recognize from Stephen Hark's memory is Father Tully. Mm-hmm. The other one is a man that you don't recognize, and this man will speak as soon as the chanting finishes. And the chanting that finishes are the two men saying the words,
"The wedding bells are ringing. They cannot be unrung. The wedding bells are singing. The call for the groom being sung."
And with that, their backs arch as if they're in enormous pain, and they just collapse.
That's not normally when I see people collapse after a wedding. It turned to Miss Cleo. Does this have anything to do with the mama and the groom?
Meanwhile, the man that I mentioned is standing next to Father Tully overhears you mention the groom, and he steps forward.
Yes, this does have to do with the groom. How did you know that, sir?
Well, they were talking about a wedding and the groom. There's usually a groom at a wedding.
Well, yes, that is quite true. So we are here we have heard the call that the groom is coming for the bride and would like to come to fulfill and consummate the wedding. So we're doing our best to invite him here, but seems like we need a few things. You know how some weddings, they say you need something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue? Well, seems like we need to acquire some things ourselves in order to pave the way for the groom's arrival. It's so lucky that you're here. May I ask your name?
Oh, my name is Silvo.
Oh, Silvo. Silvo, I haven't heard of you. Father Tully, are you familiar?
No, I'm not familiar.
I'm new in town. I'm just a wandering dance teacher. We're passing on through, trying to get to a city called Vanilla.
Oh, Vanilla. I've heard it's quite lovely this time of year. Well, I don't know if, Father Tully, do you think that it's appropriate that we allow strangers to venture into a sacred event like this and to just leave without hearing our message?
No, I don't think we should.
Well, have you heard of the groom? And are you willing to open your heart to his truth and message?
Who is the groom? If it is the groom, I think I may have spoken to him earlier. Anyways, yeah, I'm actually on a quest for a groom right now, actually.
Excuse me, did you say that you communed with the groom?
Miss Cleo is going to interject very quickly. He assisted us with some issues that we were having with our communion and our collective mind. We do not seem to have an overlap of interests, and there is no antagonism needed. And the man says,
"You're not speaking out loud. This is fascinating. No, I don't think we can let you leave. I don't think we can let you leave."
Sure about that? The groom is very insistent that we go on his journey.
Well, you seem like a nice fellow, so I'll be quite honest with you that you seem as if you could be quite useful to us, having communed.
You feel Miss Cleo stiffening next to you.
Father Tully, weren't you telling me that it would be a useful medium for some of the rituals that we may have to conduct in some of the temples that we're planning on visiting? To have the blood of one who has communed with the deities beyond?
Yes. Yes, I did.
And does it not seem as if, based on the things that these people are telling us, that this dancing man here has communed? You did say that you spoke to the groom and that he gave you a mission. Perhaps that is what's led you here.
I don't think this is the end of the journey, though. Believe me, I know a lot about journeys.
Oh, well, we just need a good amount of your blood. If we can leave any behind that might keep you alive, I'm sure that we will try. Because the wedding bells are ringing. They cannot be unrung. The wedding bells are singing. They call for the groom being sung.
The two bodies on the ground begin to convulse. The man, who is tall, has dark hair going down just in waves past his shoulders. He's dressed in a way that we might recognize as being like a groomsman. Whereas, you know, a suit jacket ends around the waist, this just keeps flowing down in the style of a robe. And rather than having a hem cut, it just ends in a train that is ragged and tattered, like it was simply torn apart. He turns to Father Tully and says,
"We can come back and collect the blood we need once they're done."
Him and Father Tully exit from the back of the chapel. But meanwhile, the two men that are on the ground convulsing, they are both flung up onto their feet in the most unnatural series of movements. And one of them is just gripping his head as if he has the worst migraine imaginable. The other one is sort of roiling like he's doing just a terrible breakdance routine. And he's flailing his limbs around, and all of a sudden something shoots out of his chest and you realize that it's two little arms. His original arms begin to expand and thicken until he just rips out of his clothing. And he turns into something that looks like a werewolf. Except that the jaws are able to split into like a sort of squid-like maw, and he has curling ram's horns coming out of his head. Meanwhile, the other one that is gripping his head, his mouth opens and black tentacles splay out from inside of the mouth. His eyes are turning a deep yellow, and you can see tentacles writhing out from his forearms, out of his sleeves as well. At this point, I will need you to roll initiative.
You know, I hope that they didn't rent those suits because they're not getting their deposit back.
I think you already have inspiration from the last episode, but if you don't, you can take it for that.
That's going to be a dirty 20 for initiative.
The werewolf, for lack of a better term, it's just going to launch itself at you as it attacks you, knowing that you're the one whose blood it needs. It gets to make a bite attack and claw attack. So first bite is a 24 to hit. So you will only take 8 damage from that attack. But the unfortunate news that I have for you is that it got a nat 20 on its second attack. The second attack is unfortunately going to do double damage because of the nat 20. You're going to take another 10 damage from the second attack. So this creature is just on top of you. So next up is you. So what would you like to do?
I'll do my basic unarmed strike first. So that is a 24.
Okay, 24 hits.
And that's going to be 6 damage. And then I'm going to spend a focus point to do a flurry of blows on him as my bonus action. So that's 2 unarmed strikes. And oh dear, those aren't good. I'm going to use inspiration on one of these. First one is a dirty 20 and the other one is a 12.
So the dirty 20 hits.
So that's going to be 9 damage to him. The flurry of blows, so if he doesn't succeed on a DC 11 dexterity saving throw, he's going to be thrown, and combined with my crusher, he actually gets pushed away 5 feet from me.
So with dex save, he gets a nat 1. So I will say that you're able to knock him prone, throw him back 5 feet. We can even double the distance if you want to throw him back a full 10 feet, which would make it easier for the party to spread out if you did want that.
All right, then werewolf guy is 10 feet in front of me. Squid face is how far in front of me?
Squid face is 10 feet past him, so he's about 20 feet away from you, towards the front of the chapel.
Okay, and my companions are all right behind me?
If we're doing this hex square style, they're all right next to you.
He'll do kind of dancey, like, kick move, and he'll be like, all right, let's do this then.
Next up is Ludlow, who is going to rush forward at the creature. He's already drawing his sword as he moves swiftly across the room. Reckless abandon. So he's going for the werewolf first. You are going to see his sword flare with light as he prepares a smite mid-run. Mm. And he does hit with his long sword. He is going to do 8 total damage as his sword flares with radiant light, and he slashes at the creature's arm, like the little arm, causing a spray of this sort of thick tar-like blood on the chapel floor. That is his turn as he stands at the ready in front of the werewolf creature. And then it is Miss Cleo's turn. How bad are you looking right now?
I'm just under half.
So she is going to hit you with a first level cure wounds, touches you. She gets a full roll for 12 HP. Whereas all the action is kind of in the center of the room right now, she's going to kite and move up the perimeter of the room towards the entrance, but keeping along the sidewall because she has ranged opportunities with her magic, of course. So we now come to the tentacle man. He's not within Ludlow's range, but he does want to keep his distance. So he is going to attack Ludlow. You see him draw his arm back and just whip, and the tentacles extend from out of his sleeve at Ludlow, like in Bloodborne. Okay, so he does 21 damage to Ludlow. Ludlow's still on his feet, but he's not looking great after that. After the tentacle man does that, he moves through the pews, and I think he has just enough movement to get like halfway up the staircase on his turn. So he's also moving off to a distance as well. We now come to Groucho's turn, and Groucho, seeing that A, the werewolf creature is prone, B, Ludlow is currently next to it, you know what a little rogue is thinking. He is going to attack with advantage, and he's going to do a sneak attack as well. So he has the hand axes that Pam gave him. So Groucho launches himself across the room and takes a running jump right at this prone werewolf's body and just lands with his hand axe just burying itself in the creature's rib cage. And you think that that's vicious enough, but then Groucho kind of hops off of the creature's torso as it's flailing, rips the hand axe across the torso, just causing this really nasty gash down its side. He proceeds to bark at the monster's still prone form. We are now back to the werewolf's turn. So the werewolf is going to use half of its movement to stand up, and it is going to split its multi-attack between first Ludlow and then Groucho. It is going to bite at Ludlow's throat, and then it is going to swipe a claw at Groucho. So first for Ludlow. All right, so Ludlow is down. And then with the claw attack, he's going to attack Groucho. No, he ties Groucho's armor class, so Groucho just barely manages to, like, catch the claw with the hand axe and gets pushed back just, like, a few inches, but he doesn't take any damage since tie goes to the defender. So that is the werewolf's turn. It is now your turn. Ludlow is down. Miss Cleo is on the perimeter in the about 30 feet away from you. You are 15 feet away from the werewolf, and the other tentacle man is across the room from you, about 40 feet away, halfway up a staircase.
I got to deal with the problem that's right in front of me. We're going to go for that unarmed strike again on the werewolf. That's going to be a 21.
21 will hit.
For 9 points of damage. Then I'm going to spend another focus point for a flurry of blows because he's a capoeira. The first one is a punch, of course, to the guy's face. And then the second one, you know, he basically like a forward flip with both of his legs going for the guy's face.
I dig it.
So that is going to be a 13.
Does not hit.
And a 17.
17 does hit. So first flip doesn't do the job, but the second foot catches him right on the brain.
That is going to be a 4 damage, but he is going to attempt the topple again, so he'll need to make that DC 11 dex save again.
This time he does make it, unfortunately.
But he is knocked back 5 feet. So he's going to try to position himself again between this guy and Groucho.
Next up in the turn order is Ludlow, who is making his first death saving throw. I'll treat him as a proper NPC, so he passes the first one. After Ludlow, we have Miss Cleo, who is... Oh, no, she has Healing Word also, so she is going to Healing Word. And you just hear a deep, guttural voice in your head shout out, and Ludlow's eyes open and his wounds seem to staunch just a little bit as he regains. This is the second time she has managed to roll max healing, so Ludlow gets a full 8 back. The dice love Ludlow, what can I say? Yeah. So he's getting back onto his feet. It is now the tentacle man's turn. So he's too far away to use his tentacles on you. But he looks at you, Silvo, and he says,
"The Grim Grinner fires."
And I need you to make an intelligence saving throw.
Man, always with these intelligence saving throws. That's a 16, fortunately.
The DC is a 17. I'm so sorry.
Darn my minus 1 in intelligence.
You unfortunately take 18 psychic damage.
Okay.
All right, so it's now Groucho's turn. Again, the werewolf was very focused on you because you pushed it back. Unfortunately, because you pushed the werewolf back and given just the sequence that has happened, there's nobody within 5 feet of the werewolf. The werewolf isn't prone, so Groucho isn't going to be able to do a sneak attack, but he is still running at it to damage it. So he's going to just do a straight attack. He is going to hit, but he does hit and nail it for 5 damage. So Groucho is just right up in this thing's face, and this time he manages to swing the hand axe, and the creature stops it with its, like, little arm forearm. Still obviously growls in pain as Groucho growls right back. So we're back to the top of the turn order. It is the werewolf's turn again. It is going to attack Groucho. It's going to reverse it this time. It's going to do the claw attack first. So it's going to hit Groucho. 11 damage to Groucho. Which is half of his current HP. But that means he's still on the floor, and Groucho is going to get an opportunity attack as the creature pushes past him to get at you. So Groucho takes an opportunity attack. He's going to miss, unfortunately. I think he's just too shaken up from that first claw attack. And now the creature is going to come at you to try to bite at you, Silvo. 17 to hit.
Yes, that's going to hit. I get to use my reaction to reduce it by 1d10 plus 7. 8 damage reduced.
So you still take 3 damage, and that is the werewolf's turn. So now the werewolf is right in front of you. Ludlow's still on the ground. That's why he didn't get an opportunity attack, but it is your turn again with the werewolf right in your face.
Okay. It's good old-fashioned unarmed strike. That is going to be a 23. I'm going to deal 6 damage with that unarmed strike,
okay.
And then spend another focus point for that beautiful flurry of blows with that front kick there. First attack is a 15.
15 hits.
And that's 6 damage. And then another 15.
Another 15 hits.
All right, and that's going to be 9 damage, okay. And he gets pushed away 5 feet and knocked prone.
Passes the dex check again, so he's pushed back 5 feet, back closer towards Groucho and Ludlow, but he is still on his feet again. Right, so it is Ludlow's turn. He gets back to his feet, spits some blood on the ground, looks at you, gives a nod, and then rushes forward with his sword yet again, preparing yet another smite as he runs, and he is going to attack the creature. Oof, swing and a miss. So at least the smite doesn't waste, but he just swings upward and the creature just manages to take one step back. So the sword just passes harmlessly past him. It is Miss Cleo's turn, and Miss Cleo is going to make the call to actually heal Groucho. Granted, she doesn't know about your particular capabilities of coming back to life, but I think she would see the little boy being in danger. Okay, so Groucho gets 7 HP back. It is now Tentacle Man's turn. He casts another spell. It does not affect you. You can make an Arcana roll if you want to see what spell he cast.
That's an 8.
So you can just tell that something magical happened. You don't know what. It is now Groucho's turn. Groucho feeling himself a little bit, and because you knocked the creature back within range of Ludlow, he can now flank and get a sneak attack on. So he is going to attack once more. He hits. Okay, so only 8 damage, but that's still something. Back to Werewolf's turn. So the Werewolf is now, you see him looking at Ludlow for just a moment, and then something makes him hesitate, and he turns towards Groucho. And once again, he's going to bite at Groucho and then rush at you this time. Groucho's looking really bad. He's still on his feet, but he's got blood dripping down. He's got a shoulder that's got a very nasty looking wound on it. As the creature pushes past him, Groucho is going to get to do an opportunity attack again. Groucho is going to miss that opportunity attack again. And Ludlow does not do anything as the creature rushes past him and comes at you with a 22 to hit.
Yeah, it's going to hit. As my reaction, I will deflect 14 of that.
So you deflect all of the damage.
With that, I get to expend my last focus point. As a reaction, I'm going to redirect the attack onto him. Okay, but he has to succeed on a DC 11 dexterity saving throw.
He fails.
Then he's going to take 10 damage.
So now it's your proper turn, because that was just a reaction. So it is your proper turn now.
All right, so I'm out of focus points. That's going to be a 17. 5 damage. As a bonus, I can do this. And that's going to be a 16.
Okay, 16 hits.
For another 9 damage.
Ludlow starts advancing, and at first it looks like Ludlow is heading towards the werewolf once again with the smite already prepared on his blade. Instead, Ludlow rushes past the werewolf and instead attacks you. He gets a 21 to hit.
Ludlow, that's not very funny. And I'm going to attempt to deflect 9 of the damage.
So you still take 5, mostly from the smite. So the edge of the blade doesn't cut into you, but making contact with the blade to knock it aside is going to have that smite just sear around your bracers and just burn into your arm.
That puts me down to 3 hit points.
So it is now Miss Cleo's turn. Miss Cleo is going to make the tough decision between you and Groucho. And you see her looking between the two of you. She's trying to figure out which one of you to hit.
Save Groucho. I'm already dead.
You can give me a persuasion roll.
That's going to be a 19.
She's going to nod and follow your direction. She looks at Ludlow and just realizes that this may not be going the way that you hoped. So she is going to once again cast Healing Word on Groucho. Groucho only gets 5 HP back this time. That's a bare minimum, but he's at least potentially able to weather another hit. You see Miss Cleo using her time to also communicate something telepathically to Groucho. Groucho says,
But we can come back for him. He'll be back soon. He'll be back.
And you can see them communicating, and you realize that they're having a conversation where Groucho is telepathically explaining your resurrection to Miss Cleo. Like, you're overhearing this. They're communicating it with you. Now it's the Tentacle Man's turn. So I need you to make a wisdom save.
That's a 14.
All right, so with a 14, unfortunately, you fail. Mass suggestion. The Tentacle Man is going to call out to you and say,
face the truth and surrender so your friends can survive, Silbo.
He's making a very reasonable suggestion that you surrender and your friends can live. So you still have advantage on the throw because determined that you have advantage against being charmed. So you can make a second roll if you want to.
I got a 17 there.
Okay, so that ties. So you still hear the suggestion, but you are at your will to choose whether or not to follow it.
Silva is going to say, Groucho, whatever happens, it was very nice to know you. And he's going to say that with a smile on his face.
Groucho whimpers and says,
I keep making friends with the people in this body. And I hope the next person is even half as nice as you are, Mr. Silva.
And as he's saying that, as he's crying, Miss Cleo is rushing towards him. to try to grab him, but he kind of shakes her and he runs towards you. The werewolf is completely still. Ludlow is still blank-eyed under the effects of the... he would be released because of the mass suggestion casting. So Ludlow is coming to. He still has his sword up. He's looking at you. He's looking around the room. He's aware of what's going on. But Groucho is giving you a big hug. And Miss Cleo nods and says, I understand that we can return for your body. We will see you, or I guess we will see the new you, if I understand correctly, soon. Thank you.
How lucky you are, Groucho, to make so many friends. I'm sure we'll meet again someday.
So Groucho takes Miss Cleo's hand and they walk outside the chapel. Ludlow, as he's walking to you, he looks at you. He nods and he offers one of those like forearm to forearm handshakes. I don't know how this works, and I don't know if you'll ever be back in this body, but I would like to get to know you better and fight alongside you again if you do return. Thank you. I hope you won't think me too dishonorable the next time we see each other. And he turns around and he's going to stab the werewolf right up through its throat, because you left the werewolf with very little HP. And he's going to spit on it and say, I'm a knight of the Shining, and I will not suffer abominations such as this. And he walks out. You're left alone in the chapel. As the door shuts behind Ludlow and Miss Cleo and Groucho, there's a quiet in the room. Even in spite of the man with the tentacles coming out of his mouth, his sleeves, the tentacles are roiling. Even as he walks down these rickety-looking steps, they don't make a sound.
If I could misty step to behind him and then like kick him off the stairs.
So you're able to teleport behind him. There's no role for that. And I'll say that you do it so suddenly that you're able to get advantage on the attack because you sneak up behind him and get the element of surprise. So go ahead and make a...
Because I'm an Eladrin of Autumn, so he's got to make an 11 saving throw to avoid being charmed by me.
Okay, surprisingly, this creature is not immune to being charmed, so... But he does make the save.
Well, that's too bad. And then I want to punch him and use that crusher to throw him over the banister and off of this staircase.
Go ahead and make the attack.
Ah, crap. A 7.
So you sneak up behind him. You attempt to charm him, but his eyes just narrow with steely focus. As you try to push him off with your crusher attack, his tentacles from his sleeve just swat your blow off course enough that it glances off of his rib cage. He is going to attack you with his tentacles in response to that. So he gets a 22 to hit.
That's going to hit. Well, I've read enough comics to know where this is going.
The tentacle that he attacks you with manages to grapple you. He's got you around the neck and it hoists you up. And he looks into your eyes for a moment. And in his eyes, you actually see the void. The same void that you passed through to come into this body and are about to enter into again. He turns your body around and you feel two things piercing you. One pierces your back as you feel blood begin to drain out of your body, and he's collecting it into a jar that you can't see, but the other cracks open your skull as you begin to feel this slurping sensation as this creature, this transformed person, begins to eat Silvo's brain. And as your vision fades, darkness clouds over, and once again, you are passing into the darkness, and you are entering a threshold just as someone else is walking past you, leaving it.
You think you could have bought me dinner first. Hey, whoever you are, look after Groucho. He's a good kid.
All right, Trevor. Thanks so much for playing. Welcome to the game, Cody Miller.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. So if you could start us off by telling us a little bit about your character, Norm, the world he came from.
Yeah. Norm is a kind of a monk. He started off as a monk, but ran afoul of another gentleman in his monastery. And his mentor thought it best that he leave after a secret that he had was exposed to some of the other members of the monastery that might make it uncomfortable for them, at least what his mentor thought. He typically looks like an elf with droopy skin that looks either unusually moist or unusually dry, depending on the time, and has some quirky characteristics, especially if you ask anyone who's ever eaten a meal with him, but is good-natured. In his world, he is a bit of a hero, but kind of transitioned to being a postmaster general. And one day his mail was opened, frustrated him so much that he decided to make it his goal to open a rival post office and kind of rose to the ranks to become postmaster general.
All right. I think we'll get into that a little bit more, maybe in the next episode, potentially in a behind the scenes episode. But for now, could you tell us about how Norm died?
He was traveling across a body of water to open another chapter of his post office at a place he felt didn't have those services. As bad luck would have it, a storm blew in and upturned the boat. But unfortunately, a massive sea creature came. And the last thing Norm remembers is being inside of its dark, large mouth.
And so that darkness is appropriate because there's an easy transition from one darkness to another. I think the difference that Norm would sense is the fact that there's this cushioning as you're being squeezed from all sides by the innards and digestive tract of this enormous sea creature. And then all of a sudden, you're no longer feeling that pressure. You're just feeling lightness. You're in a darkness, but Norm is on his own 2 feet. And in this darkness, rather than, say, a sphincter or passage into another section of the digestion, Norm sees the doorway, and he feels compelled to walk through that doorway. And as he's walking through the doorway, he hears Silvo.
Hey, whoever you are, look after Groucho. He's a good kid.
Do you say anything back to that person?
Sure. Not totally sure who that is or where I am, but I'll do so.
As you pledge to do so, you hear another voice in your head as you feel the rush, almost overwhelmingly, the sensations of life, of touch, of smell, sound, all of your senses flare back into life. And you hear the voice in your head of Abby saying,
"Welcome to the game. Here, let me get you caught up."
And as I've said before, like Neo in the Matrix learning Kung Fu, you have all the memories of your now 3 predecessors downloaded into you. And as you open your eyes, you realize that Abby, from your memories, who has previously been a chainmail shirt, a set of bracers, and so forth, Abby is now the skin that is covering you. Abby is your complete skin underneath your clothing.
Oh, wow. That's convenient.
Yeah, I figured it would be kind of helpful. I mean, you know, I saw your background and, you know, I figured I'd help you out a little bit. If you don't like the elf look, I can do something different for you.
Oh, no, that works. I've just never had a skin talk to me before. That's a first, but not the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me.
Well, you know, you're the first skeleton that I've ever had to, you know, help out so far. Granted, you're only the 4th person I've met, but hey, what are the odds?
You take a look around and you see the black masked, purple accented visage of Miss Cleo looking in your direction. And she's sitting about 15 feet away, crisscross applesauce. You are currently in a thicket. It is late afternoon, so there's a good amount of sunlight. And she's just staring implacably at you. She's not moving as you've been talking out loud to Abby, but she is clearly staring at you.
Oh, it was Cleo, right?
Yes. Ludlow and Groucho had informed me that a new person would be arriving, one who is Pam but is not Pam, one who is Silvo but is not Silvo. Your name is?
Norm, or Norman, whatever you prefer. Most people call me Norm, but my employees call me Norman.
Well, if you are to honor the word of your predecessor, I shall call you Norm. My name is Miss Cleo.
Well, it's great to meet you. I am a man of my word, so it's my intention to honor my predecessor.
Good. We shall continue our journey to Vanilla. However, 2 of our companions have been delayed, it seems. They left some hours ago. Groucho seemed excited and extremely concerned because he said he heard the call of one called Mr. Beepo.
Is that name concerning to you?
It is not to me. They went off about 6 hours ago in pursuit of this Mr. Beepo. I believe it would be in our interest to wait here until at least sunset, for past this thicket and across the highway, a large caravan of celebrants and performers have set up shop. I do not know when they will be moving on, but it seems as if they are setting up for some time. I do believe it would be our interest to have the cover of darkness to bypass them, or at least to stick to the woods and use cover of darkness even then.
Well, what are they celebrating? I don't know that we need to bypass them.
I did venture out to do a little bit of scouting to ascertain what type of danger they might present. They refer to themselves as a circus.
Ah, well, you know, I'm a music fan myself. What's the problem with them?
They are a large group of people. They have many skilled acrobatics people, from what I saw. They seem to have a large number of pyrotechnics, and they are preparing large amounts of food, which lead me to believe that they have an army that they are preparing for some sort of siege, perhaps.
Well, you know, I'm not really into armies and sieges, but I like a good show. Maybe we could watch from a distance, you know?
I would be willing to venture forth with a certain amount of care with you. Should we perhaps also search for Groucho and Captain Ludlow?
I think that's a good idea.
And she stands up and holds her hand out to you to help you up.
She can kind of feel the slipperiness of my skin as I'm still getting used to it a little bit.
Her eyes narrow just slightly. You know what? I'm going to make an insight roll. So she rolls really poorly on insight. So she just thinks maybe that's part of the resurrection process, that you come out a little bit dewy. As you are holding her hand, you begin to hear music. What is Norm's favorite instrument?
That would be the kazoo.
You hear a low bass note of a kazoo. You almost can't believe it, but it's this low, thrumming, sonorous noise that slowly reveals itself into a higher octave melody that makes Norm's toes tap. It makes him start to dance a little bit in place. And Miss Cleo kind of cocks her head at you and then seems to turn it slightly as if she begins to hear the noise as well. Now, the circus that Miss Cleo mentioned is to the northeast of your current position in the thicket. The noise seems to be coming from the opposite direction to the west. What do you want to do?
I'll tell her, well, I think my ears tell me this music is not coming from where you said that the folks were performing.
No, it seems that I may have made a mistake. Perhaps they have a retinue of musicians or a soloist who is practicing. That soloist does appear to be highly skilled. Shall we go and investigate?
Let's, you know, maybe meet someone famous. That's never a bad choice, right?
Absolutely. I shall accompany you.
You set off to the west from the thicket. You begin walking through these dense, shaded, thickly wooded areas. And as you pass through the forest, it's hard to find some kind of a path, but you do know that you're definitely following the sound. The kazoo is revealing itself more and more as you continue in this direction. Eventually, the ground begins to slope downward. You can no longer see the sky, and even just the barest wisps of sunlight are beginning to creep through. Until finally, for some reason, the quality of the light changes. It becomes more golden. It becomes more ambient around you. You come into another clearing, and the kazoo melody is something truly lovely, truly relaxing. You feel every bit of lingering fear, sadness, or tragedy about your death that to you, Norm, feels like it was just mere moments ago. You feel all of that washed away by this music. As you set foot into this new clearing, you realize that it is something of a natural amphitheater. The space where you're entering forms sort of a natural audience space that all curves down inward to a single circular point with a large, smooth alabaster stone on which sits a beautiful elfin woman who is holding the most elegant-looking wood-carved kazoo that you have ever seen. And as you set foot into this audience space, all around you, the trees burst with cherry blossoms and flowers. The grass springs up verdant, and flowers follow your footsteps as you walk down the slope towards this woman. You recognize her as you get closer from the etching on the corridor in the mines where you found Mr. Bebo. She is the elfin woman who is depicted on that carving. And as she finishes her song, she smiles up at you and says,
"Hi, I'm Liliana. It's so nice to meet you."
Oh, well, the pleasure is mine. Can I call you Lily?
You can. I was ready to call you Pam, but it seems like you're Pam, but not Pam.
I tend to be people and not people at the same time, but call me Norm or Norman. Norm for short, but I guess Norman for long. Honestly, beautiful music you were doing. I haven't heard kazoo quite like that in a long time.
Well, this is just a quick sort of, you know, thing that I threw together. You know, there was a lovely little spruce tree on the way here. I was hoping to run into you. One of my children has gone missing, and I figured you would, you know, be very concerned about it since you're Pam, not Pam. And I just wanted to see if I could lend you a hand. If you could complete a little errand, it would be very helpful for you, not just with Mr. Beepo, but potentially a couple other things that might be coming your way.
You know, we're also trying to find our friends, but if it fits into that other objective, I think we can squeeze you in.
Well, your friends are in trouble, but they're in the kind of trouble right now where they, you know, their situation isn't going to change too much in the amount of time that it'll take you to run this little errand. You see, in the time that you spent sleeping and decided to walk over here as opposed to going over to them, sorry, I just happen to know everything that's going on in the woods of these lands. They've been captured and they're being held by people that are going to try to sell them into slavery. If you help me out, I can help you out and make it very easy for you to rescue them. How does that sound?
By giving me the money to buy them?
No, gosh, no. I'm a woodland deity. I don't deal in money, but I do deal in special magic items that you can earn if you complete a little quest for me.
Okay, I want to rescue them, so I guess that works.
Now, let's get started then. And she stands up and she holds this large bass kazoo, because a bass kazoo is going to be very long.
Mm-hmm.
And she's holding it balanced on both of her upward palms. And she begins to lift it up towards your face as if she's giving it to you to examine very closely. But then when it's about 6 inches from your head, she takes it in one hand and just very lightly taps you on the nose with it. And as it touches you, it doesn't hurt. It barely even feels like it makes contact. But for some reason, your body is just feels like it's thrown back with this enormous inertia. And even though you feel the sensation of falling back, it feels as if the world itself is turning upwards with you, as if the very ground that you are standing on is what is flipping you upward. And then at a certain point, your feet leave the earth and you begin to plummet upward into the sky.
Oh.
And as you're falling, the clouds part and you see a new forest rushing up to meet you. And off in the distance, you can see a fortress past a dark wood covered in brambles and vines. And as you touch down in a thicket, very much like the one that you just left, but again, covered in thorns, covered in bulbous fungus and mushrooms, Lil appears and tells you, okay, so the thing we both need is right there in that fortress, and I'll tell you all about it.
Thank you for listening to D&D Versus. This episode features Trevor Hegstrom as Silvo, Cody Miller as Norm, and yours truly, Yanato Blue, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast. Support our podcast and get access to additional content at patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes out June 26th.